Welcome to the 10 Golden Rules of Internet Marketing for Law Firms podcast, featuring the latest strategies and techniques to drive traffic to your website and convert that traffic into clients. Now, here's the founder and CEO of 10 Golden Rules, Jay Berkowitz.
What we're seeing is because those are big budgets and they're running enormous TV schedules. They have tons and tons of ads running, but the consumers, 50% of their consumers are no longer, they can't see their ads because they don't have a cable subscription and they don't have a, you know, the satellite subscription. So in order to reach those consumers and get that message out there, you have to go into the streaming world.
Welcome to the 10 Golden Rules of Internet Marketing for Law Firms podcast, featuring the latest strategies and techniques to drive traffic to your website and convert that traffic into clients. Now, here's the founder and CEO of 10 Golden Rules, Jay Berkowitz.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whatever time you're listening to this podcast, welcome to the 10 Golden Rules of Internet Marketing for Law Firms. Got a great guest today, David Klein, and we're, a couple weeks after TGR Live, Growth Strategies for Law Firms, our live event. We did record video, and a bunch of people are asking us, can they get the audio and video? And we should have that edited up in the next couple weeks, so stay tuned for that. If you enjoy these webinars, these podcasts, these interviews, I'd really appreciate if you give us a like and a follow, a subscribe on YouTube, a five-star rating on iTunes. That really helps us get great guests if people see we have lots of subscribers. Anyways, without further ado, welcome David Klein from Consult TV to the 10 Golden Rules podcast.
Thank you for having me, Jay.
So today we're going to unravel one of the great mysteries of legal marketing and marketing, and it's called OTT, which is confusing enough. I like to just call it digital TV. And what we're talking about today, David's a real expert and his company provides a service, is the TV commercials that stream as opposed to run on, you know, the three networks. Like old TV, if you go way back, ran on CBS, NBC, and ABC. And then as cable came into the mix, you could run TV ads through cable, and you could be a little bit more targeted. Like in the grand old days, if you ran an ad, you had to target all of the United States, right? And some of it leaked into Canada. I grew up in Canada watching the big three networks. And now you can be very, very precise in your targeting. You can target people who actually went to certain websites, and you can target people in very specific communities. I know there's a local real estate agent, his ads always come up when I'm streaming my sports games on my ESPN app. So this is a very new opportunity for marketing. I say new, people have been doing it for 4 or 5 years now, but it now seems to really have been crossing the threshold. So anyways, I'll let David introduce himself first. David, you know, why don't you start a little bit at the beginning, tell us a little bit about your background and how you became an expert in OTT and digital TV.
I'm happy to do it. So I've been in the advertising world for about over 20 years. I started with a little local magazine selling print advertising. And then from there, we built a website, had an event business. And so I really got interested in digital marketing, spent many, many years doing PPC, SEO, and in your world, Jay, and working with clients and had a lot of legal clients back then, helping them with their paid search advertising and then websites, et cetera. And so that was my career path for many years. And about 3.5 years ago, I had a good friend that I knew from my PPC days was in this company, Consult TV, and they were growing. And I decided to join forces with him. And so I was familiar with programmatic placement. I'd been doing a lot of programmatic placement in the geofencing and the display arena. That was something that was a burgeoning industry. And even 3.5 years ago, it's hard to believe. It's a short period of time, but the changes in this industry have just been monumental. And you're correct. It really is at a tipping point. But that's been my history. So 20 plus years of advertising and a lot of work in PPC websites. So I understand that space. I've been out of it for a few years and now really immersed in helping legal advertisers. Essentially, is this burgeoning opportunity? Is this change of how to distribute those ads is taking place, helping them make that transition so that their law firms continue to prosper?
And it's a family affair. Like, you guys are a power media couple. I got to meet your lovely wife in Costa Rica when we were at a legal conference, and she's also in media and media sales, right?
She is, and that's very kind, and it's great because we love to talk shop, and she actually sold TV for years and years for the local NBC affiliate here in Portland, Oregon, and we are that's cool. I'll tell her you said that. That's kind, Jake.
Now, do you guys track who's having a better quarter and who's getting quota?
No, absolutely not. That's a hard no, my friend.
Yeah, we won't be going there, right? Something tells me I wouldn't want to compete with her.
No.
All right. So, let's try and unravel this mystery, shall we? Here's my personal take. I'm from Canada. I'm from Winnipeg, Canada. And of course, I watch my Winnipeg Jets. Now, I live in Florida, which is football country, and there's not a lot of coverage for the Winnipeg Jets. So I guess for 3 or 4 years now, ESPN and the NHL have had a deal, and I can stream on the ESPN app and see my beloved but yet heartbreaking Winnipeg Jets. So we just got knocked out of the playoffs. And for me, this has been an interesting evolution because, watching the same media property that comes in from another market and then the ability for the advertisers to target me here in Florida, when I started this, watching this tool, this media source, there was maybe one commercial in a 3-hour hockey game. And I would see the ESPN promo for their 30 on 30 about 50 times in every game. And it drove me crazy. And I could sing the song for you. I won't. And then now here we are 3 or 4 years later. And it's not perfect, but I would say that there's about 30 commercials in a game. And I'm just guessing on the number. You could probably tell me. And about 20 or 15 to 20 episodes of the exact same 30 on 30. Promo spot. ESPN should definitely use that time more effectively. But what I've seen is an evolution. So now, I'll see the local real estate guy. I'll see the local car dealerships. And, they have the ability to target me very precisely. And sometimes even those ads that we all think are kind of creepy, what we call retargeting in the industry, where if I went to a website, I'll see an ad for that exact website. So, talk to us a little bit about the technology and if you can, try and differentiate OTT and the fixed TV versus the streaming that you get on your phone.
Got it. So, yeah, well, let's start with some definitions, Jay, because however OTT stuck in the industry, I just want to strangle that person metaphorically because it doesn't make a lot. OTT, by the way, stands for over the top. And at the very beginning of streaming TV, somebody in the TV world said, well, we're going to have this streaming distribution over the top of our traditional distribution of through the affiliate. So that's where OTT comes from. So that's the umbrella that covers really any content that's served through the internet. But it's very confusing. So under that umbrella of OTT,
the sooner OTT goes away, as a term,
unfortunately, we ought to start a movement to
digital and streaming TV. It starts here today on the 10 Golden Rules podcast. If anyone says OTT, tell them, hey, I'm only going to talk to you today about digital or streaming TV.
That's right.
Because, as a consumer, as an advertiser, you don't really care if someone has a fixed TV on their wall and they're watching YouTube or Hulu, or if they're holding it in their hand, or by the way, a lot of times my phone now is capable of streaming to the TV on the wall. So to me as a consumer, it's just ads and content, and I don't care what you call it.
Yeah, now this is where we start peeling back some of the layers, is that there certainly is the capability of serving ads to just connected TV. So you can tell the system, we don't want to be on phones. We just want to be on your smart TV on your wall. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being on the phones, because as a matter of fact, then you can also tell the system, okay, we want to be on smart TV and we want to also be on desktop and mobile phones. So the whole point of that is that from a distribution standpoint and a device, there is the capability of deciding what percentage of your impressions you want to have on the individual device. And what we see, Jay, by the way, is that on the wall TV, those impressions are a little bit more effective for one, because people typically they're watching their TV, they're sitting on their couch, they're engaged. You have a factor where there's more likely somebody's going to be sitting next to you on the couch, as opposed to if you're watching your phone, it's just going to be one impression. So again, we're getting a little bit in the weeds, but the point is what this ecosystem allows us to do is choose the device. But what you were sharing on ESPN is really, that's a really great indication of how this whole system is changing, because those are publisher decisions. So what was happening is that ESPN was deciding, you know what, we're not really making our inventory available programmatically. That's why you were getting those over looped in 30 for 30 promos over and over and over, because they made a conscious decision to not make that space available. Now they're making some of that space available. So what's happening now is that we're a demand side platform. So we represent the advertisers, we take their ads and we put them into the system. And the publishers then, they decide, okay, how much of our inventory do we want to make available programmatically? Because they want to sell it directly, because that's how they're going to get the highest rate, is when then they can go to Procter & Gamble and Ford and say, you buy these spots, and they're going to charge the highest rate. And then in the middle, there's exchanges. So the exchanges sort out all the what's going back and forth between the demand side and the publisher side. And what we're seeing is, because the streaming audience now is swelling by all accounts larger than the traditional, that now these publishers are starting to say, we can't sell all this inventory, we're going to make more of it available programmatically.
Fantastic. So make it real now, you know, bring it down. I'm a personal injury law firm or a family attorney or, you know, a bankruptcy lawyer. How can I use this? Do I need to be a TV advertiser? Do I need a fancy, you know, $50,000 or $100,000 production TV commercial?
You know, the short answer is no, but like everything else in this world, it's a complex world. So the answer to that is the content matters. And you know, we had some really great conversations at your conference last week about it does matter. And what is your brand? What is your differentiator as a law firm? So I'm just going to use it. I know a lot of law firms really love sports and they get involved in sports marketing and sponsoring the local team, whatever that is. And if that's the case, then this is where being able to serve these ads and leveraging that brand lift and that awareness lift is really, really important. So the answer is that this is still TV. Like, we're not reinventing the wheel. And I would say this, Jay, is, you know, I know you're an expert in the digital world. You know, when people left the yellow pages to PPC, that was a complete paradigm shift because the technology was different. The consumer experience was completely different. In this case, it's still what's the same is it's still a 30-second spot. So it's still TV, but just the way it's distributed and the targeting behind that distribution is enormously different. So the answer to the question is I would always, when I work with law firms, is I ask them, you know, if they're doing TV, that's where really the consumers are changing. So the law firms need to change and put that message in front of the eyeballs where their consumers are, which their potential clients are, which now is shifting more towards streaming.
And what kind of creative works the best?
So there's a couple of best practices I would always recommend. So This isn't a very bottom of the funnel, so it's not necessarily a direct response, like say a paid search ad. But having your website on the ad for the entirety of the ad, QR codes they're an oldie but a goodie, but they're making a comeback. And we just strongly recommend having a QR code if you're doing a newsletter, what to do in an accident kind of a newsletter, whatever your current system is, that's great. And then, of course, the phone number, because even though
explain QR codes, you know, again, dummy this down.
Sure. So a QR code is that goofy looking box with the dots on it. And so when you put that QR code on your TV ad, on your streaming TV ad, by the way, it's non-skippable, so people have to watch the ad, another kind of a plus of streaming TV, but they can pause it, then they take a picture with their phone, and that QR code sends them directly to whatever page you want them to go. So it could be to your homepage, it could be to sign up for our newsletter. I have clients that do a, they have like a little one-page white paper, what to do in an accident. So they get the QR code, you have to give your name and your email address, and then boom, they send you a what to do if you're in an accident that you can save on your phone. So it what it does is it creates engagement and it helps build an audience list, and it's effective. People are very familiar, they're very comfortable with QR codes, and that's a best practice.
That's fantastic. And I've had a lot of success with QR codes in my presentations. And it's like I got to have it every time now. I've realized it's so beneficial. And, you know, this is one of my trick questions, and I you're a smart guy, so I don't feel bad throwing the curveball at you.
Sure.
And I've always used this question as a challenging question for some of my smartest friends in the industry. You know, what, and typically it's what should be on the landing page, but for you, what should be in the commercial? Should we show a car, let's assume we're talking about a local personal injury lawyer. Should we show a car accident? Should we show the lawyer in court fighting, you know, on behalf of the client? Should we show the lawyer fighting with the insurance company? Should we show a big check? What's going to get the best results?
So I think that the big, and that is a great question, and it's a complex one. So the first thing I would say is be true to your brand. So don't be consistent and true to your brand.
Ding, ding, and, ding, ding, ding. By the way, that is the right answer. I'm going to let you answer, but you know, I've asked this question for many years, and I've found that the right answer is that you got to find out what you stand for. And you got to talk about what you stand for, because actually people don't want to see car accidents and they don't want to go to court, but I'll let you answer. So be true to your brand.
Be true to your brand and find out what that is. What is your unique position, whether you're local, et cetera. But I do believe this, and I've heard this from a couple of different sources, is that a lot of times the attorneys, they look around at their market and they're really competitive with everybody else in the market. But remember, their biggest competitor is the insurance companies. And you look at all the advertising that Progressive and Allstate and Geico does. Why do they do that? Because when they get in an accident, people say, well, the Gecko isn't going to screw me over. I mean, that's one of the strategies. That's why they spend hundreds of millions of dollars. So the point of all that is, I think part of that messaging is that that we're here, that it's the insurance companies. I would just say that's a really consistent message, because what happens is somebody gets in an accident, let's say it's not a traumatic accident, because there's a lot more non-traumatic accidents. When they get in a fight with, when they get the offer from their insurance company and it's a fraction of what they thought they need, what's fair, you know, then they go, oh, no, I'm mad. Now I'm going to go and get an attorney to help me. So the
one of the attorneys used to always sing to me?
What's that?
Nationwide's not on your side.
That's so, I mean, and Nationwide spends how much money saying Nationwide is on your side? So A, true to your brand, and then B, just so keep it in the back.
If you're the community attorney that cares, if you're the family lawyers, if you're the firm that fights to get you the biggest settlement, if you're the firm that fights the insurance company, figure out your brand message and carry that brand message through your creative.
And I think an underlying current is, you know, is get the messaging out that you need me because you are going to be better off by than dealing with the insurance company yourself. Like that is I think regardless of what your brand is, having part of your messaging, realizing your biggest competitor is the Emu, the Gecko, Jake from State Farm. I mean, those are your competitors as well. And I think sometimes the attorneys, as they're formulating their message, they know that. This isn't profound, but I think they forget that when they're formulating their message. So it doesn't have to be overt, but just making that part of the message to those folks out there watching those commercials.
Fantastic. And so, you know, I grew up in the old days of TV, and we, you know, it was minimum $100,000 to make a TV commercial. and you know, you could, the TV stations would patch together some stuff for less. But, you know, really, you know, I worked for Coca-Cola and McDonald's, and, you know, we would make commercials that would stand the test of time, and they would stand out for a year, and we'd do research and the whole deal. You know, how much can you make a TV commercial today that can have an effective result?
Yeah. So, and the nice thing, and we could really dive into a ton of targeting options, but streaming, but connected TV, streaming TV offers a wide range of budgets, targeting options, both in terms of geography and also the data bits that you can use if you have Spanish speaking.
No, first, I'm talking about the creative. Like, this is running a commercial, right? It's a 30-second, 60-second commercial, and it's running up against the nationwide. Like, nationwide could be the spot before you. So they spent a gazillion dollars, and they got, you know, a celebrity and a, you know, rock band, and they got the ants or the, you know, the rock band.
Well, are you talking about?
Or the Geico, you know. And now I got to run a commercial. It's going to convince people, like, hey, you know, these guys aren't on your side, and you should call me because I'm going to fight the insurance company. So the creative's got to stand out.
Yes.
How much does it cost to make a TV commercial? And how do you do that? Like, does Consult TV make TV commercials?
The answer is no. So we are not a creative agency. So we're a demand side platform. Our job is to distribute that commercial that you make. And look, there's a lot of great agencies out there that create TV commercials. I've seen budgets that are in the mid, you know, I'm just going to give a really wide range, you know, 3 to 5,000 up to, I mean, I've seen people spend $50,000 on commercial shoots that what they're shooting commercials for the next couple of years. So we are not
really you can start as small as 3 to 5,000 for media.
I think that is something that would work. Yeah.
Fantastic. And obviously that's not for New York City, but, you know, for smaller markets and targeting a tight geo, you can go
and I'm talking about the commercial, the commercial production,
not the commercial production. Okay.
Yeah.
So 3 to 5,000 for a decent commercial. And, you know, the biggest change, of course, is the iPhone is much better than the, you know, cameras that used to shoot like the epic Hollywood movies. So the iPhone has incredible capability. And obviously, you know, a guy with a decent camera can do a beautiful HD commercial, and that's why it's 3 to 5,000. Now, obviously, you need an idea. You got to be on brand. You got to have a message. Got to have a call to action, and probably include the QR code. So now we got our creative. What's the basic media start point for the cost of the airing the ads?
Yeah, and so that's where I was thinking you were asking earlier. So sorry, I got a little didn't understand the question. So again, if there's a wide range, Jay, but just to give you a straight answer, if you're in a mid-market, so if you're in a 25 to 100 or 150 DMA level market, and TV buyers are, you know, certainly will understand that.
What does that mean? We've got a client in Carmel, Indiana, and Oklahoma City.
Got it. So those would be mid. So if you look at the size of your TV market, those are all ranked. So Carmel, Indiana, and Oklahoma City are going to be mid-markets. They're going to be,
okay, I don't that's know. That's a good example. Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're going to, and then a top market is going to be a Miami, Houston, LA, New York, et cetera. So Chicago, basically where the pro teams are going to be your bigger markets. And then there's a ton of mid-markets. So for mid-markets, we see folks successful in the $10,000 to $20,000 range. Now, certainly people spend a lot more than that.
That's $10,000 to $20,000 a month.
Yes, sir.
$10,000 to $20,000 a month. Okay.
Yeah, and then in the major metros, we see people successful in the $20,000 to $30,000. But Jay, here's where that ultimately I think the most important part of this is a change of viewership. Just thinking about the consumer, and the reason I bring that up is that there are many law firms that their TV budgets, it's a big part of their marketing, and they spend $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 a month is their TV budget. And in those situations, they're using that as a middle of the funnel brand lift. And of course, it plays into all the other marketing that they're doing, sponsoring the pro teams, doing all the digital advertising, making sure their websites are great. So the point of all that is in those situations, what we're seeing is because those are big budgets and they're running enormous TV schedules. They have tons and tons of ads running, but the consumers, 50% of their consumers are no longer, they can't see their ads because they don't have a cable subscription and they don't have a, you know, the satellite subscription. So in order to reach those consumers and get that message out there, you have to go into the streaming world.
So you said, you know, 10 to 20,000 in mid-market, you can be successful.
Yes, sir.
How do you define success? Are we talking about building the brand or getting phone calls and actually converted signed clients?
Yeah, I love that question because it's the latter. Like this is, you know, we love the awareness. We love the creative aspect of it. And it's great. We love helping attorneys get their message out. But ultimately, I look at it as they're hiring me to help them grow their practice. Like this is a growth strategy. This is a big investment for any of the law firms that we work at. So again, what we see and what we know to be true is that when people, this works when people see those ads, we control the frequency. Most people are not in an auto accident. They're not fighting with their insurance company, so they don't need you. But when they need you, what do? They pick up their phone and they Google, hopefully they Google the name of the law firm. But a lot of times they might Google lawyer near me, car, you know, whatever they Google. And ultimately at that point, we want them to choose the attorneys that we're working with. So to answer your question, what I strongly recommend is like, let's put a baseline in place and look at what's your monthly leads? What's the monthly number of cases that you're booking? Every law firm knows those numbers because those are, you know, they're lagging indicators, but they know them very, very well. And say, and again, in an ideal world, we're not going to make any other changes because this is not something where we can say, well, this ad at 3 o'clock on Tuesday is the one that generated the call. Well, that's not the world that we live in. But what we can say is that now we're taking some budget from TV. This happens quite a bit. We're putting it into streaming. And we started with, you know, 100 leads coming in and 20 book cases, I'm going to say, for, you know, whatever the number is. Yep. And now 90 days later, we're at 150 leads coming in and 30 book cases. And that ultimately is where we partner with the agencies that we work with or for working directly. Usually most of our business is through agencies. And that's ultimately the standard that we're held to.
So I guess there's associated benefits with running these ads is what you're saying. So like some people are going to scan the QR code, download the auto accident handbook, and eventually call the firm. And yep. You can track it because they use the phone, can have a tracking phone number in that auto accident handbook. But there's the other benefit you said, like some people are going to look up the name of the firm. They're going to go to their website. They're going to call the number on the website. It's not going to be directly associated with having seen the OTT or digital streaming TV ad.
So, and I think a really good question.
You've got to account for that balloon effect, the umbrella effect of running the ads.
Yes, sir. And it also, like I said earlier, that this is still a 30-second TV spot. This is not a complete paradigm shift like we discussed from the yellow pages to PPC. So the question is, how are you currently measuring your TV ads or you know the lift that you're getting from TV? And they may say, you know, organic traffic on our website or whatever the case is. So that's also the point of you know, we want to measure, we want to know that this is working and having those types of conversations typically with the agency is very productive because again, we're establishing that baseline. This is what the expectation is of how they're measuring the success of their current TV campaign. Now we're going to be more targeted and we should see a lift, and that's the goal that we're reaching, that we're striving for.
Yeah, we had a great case study at our TGR Live conference. Josephine Roebuck from Jeff McDonald. So again, nice mid-market example, Richmond, Virginia. Yep. They are a TV agency, and Josephine presented a case study. They took 25% of their TV budget and converted it to digital streaming OTT. And they saw that lift that you talked about. So they definitely had some direct trackable, traceable cases, but they just said everything else worked a little bit better. As a percentage, they saw a very measurable, definable increase.
And that's what my expectation is in working with clients.
Fantastic. Do you have like a case study like that? Do you want to share, you know, a market name of the attorney or not? you know, some kind of demonstrable result.
Yeah, and actually, so what Josephine had shared, I've seen, and there's one case study, and I have several examples, but one I'll talk about. It's in a North Carolina market, and they had a very, very large law firm come in. I'll share the law firm that came in was Morgan & Morgan. I mean, they're, you know, a humongous TV advertiser. Big dog. So they were coming into one of the North Carolina markets, and the law firm said, look, we've been on TV. They had a good budget. They were spending, probably about $1 million a year. So they were it, but Morgan & Morgan was going to outspend that. So we can't compete with them. So what they did about 2.5 years ago is they moved a significant portion of their traditional TV budget to streaming. Because they knew exactly, again, the number of leads and cases, very, very plugged in. And what they've seen, and this has been very consistent over 2 years, is that their budget didn't change. And this is really a success story because they didn't invest any more money. They just moved it into this targeted streaming world. And they've seen about they went from about 80 cases a month booked to 120, 125, and that's been very consistent now for really a year and a half. It took about 6 months, and then they saw that steady lift, and now, so they're spending the same amount of money with essentially 30 to 40% more cases booked per month.
Awesome. So it's really time where I think firms, and we're starting with our clients, need to dip their toe in the market and get an understanding of this new property. So just to segue a little bit, you were at our conference last week. For folks who missed it, go ahead and give us a little synopsis. What were some of the best things about the TGR Live?
Well, you did a great, I mean, every speaker was great. And I really mean that. I mean, I got something, I took so many pages of notes. But I just have to say, Justin, Lovely, really. What he talked about was AI and how he uses AI.
Justin Lovely is an attorney from South Carolina who's figured out 8 or 10 different ways to use AI practically in his law firm. He's saving time, saving money, increasing his efficiency. As a matter of fact, if you're on our YouTube channel, you can find a video where Justin demonstrates all these great time-saving AI tools. So Justin Lovely, go ahead.
Yeah, and the big learning with that, Justin, is that shared is it didn't occur to me how much AI helps other software talk to each other. So you're really leveraging, it's not just like going into ChatGPT and saying, help me write this email. It's going into other, just for example, the one that really blew my mind was taking a piece of long content, like a 40-minute podcast, putting it in that AI, and then they will cut that up. I can't remember the name of the AI.
Again, it's in my notes. Opus, his software was Opus, and it actually creates a number of short videos for you that you can use in, you know, Reels and TikToks and YouTube Shorts. It's amazing.
I can't wait to play around with it. So that was a great learning. And the gentleman from England, he also really had a great point. Tell me his name again.
John McCarthy, the law firm profit coach. He was great too.
He was great. And he just brings up a great point is if you can just be a little bit better in a couple of things. So you're 1% better here, 1% better there. Over time, you can grow your firm 20 or 30 or 10 or whatever the case is. And to your point about the creative, it's a really good point, is that if you can just put a QR code on your ad. Now, the designers always freak out. Like they hate the QR codes on the ad. But if it just helps
you. It doesn't help you at the award shows.
No, you're not going to win. But that was a really good learning, is that if you can prove your targeting just 1%, your creative 1%, your intake 1%, you know, all of those things, it makes a big difference.
Awesome. Thank you. So you'll be back TGR Live 2025.
If you'll have me, I would love to attend, Jay. It was a great 2.5-3 days of learning.
No, we really enjoyed it, and it was a lot of work getting year one out and out the door, and now we're already starting planning for next year. So, you know, as I said before, you're a smart guy, someone whose opinion I value, and one of the things that I'd like to ask on this podcast is What are some tips you have for law firms in your role as consultant? Like, you know, I on my planning webinar every year, I show an example of one firm that gets about 5,000 visitors to their website and they sign about 80 cases. Another firm that gets 5,000 visitors to their website and they sign about 20 personal injury cases. You know, what's the big difference? You know, the one firm with 80 cases has like a 4.9 Google stars. The firm with 20 cases has a 3.4 Google stars. Well, guess what? You know, they don't run their operation well. So as a consultant looking from the outside in, I see things like you got to be able to answer the phone. You've got to get the case into, you know, to an attorney quickly. You've got to get back to your customers. You've got to run efficiently. You've got to be financially prudent. You got to pay your bills. You know, all the things that make any business successful are really critical for the law firms. So as a consultant looking from the outside in, what are some of the tips you would say help law firms succeed, you know, either specifically with digital TV or just in general?
Yeah. So I think the most important conversation that I have is a lot of times I get asked, well, what's the best tactic? What's the best, you know, service that I should do so that I get the most return in the most cases? And I just responded that that's not a good question. A better question, and the question that I think we should discuss is, what's the best combination of tactics so that my law firm grows? And we're all constrained by finite time, budgets, et cetera. So as you look across the landscape of the wide range of options that law firms have to help market their services.
TV, radio, billboards, Google.
Yeah. And it's all, you know, it's every, and it's a circle. They're all connected. We know that decision-making is 80% subconscious. So that means getting that messaging out there. When somebody picks up that phone and they're ready to make, when they're in market for an attorney, being able to influence that 80% of subconscious decision-making as much as possible is incredibly important. Again, with the understanding we're all constrained by time and money. So ultimately, as you work with your agency and your consultants, is leverage their experience and knowledge. And as a law firm, say, this is what our budget is, both time-wise, execution-wise, budget-wise, and saying, what are the pieces? How much should we allocate to TV? How much should we allocate to our website? How much should we allocate to PPC, rate, et cetera? And then you A-B test. I think a quarterly A-B test makes sense. If you're constantly making changes every month, then you're not going to be able to really measure because you don't know which change you made made the most sense. So I would say, what's the right combination is the question to ask. Establish that. And then work with your agency, you know, work with your marketing folks internally, work with consultants that execute that plan. And then every 90 days, look at your TV budget, look at your PPC budget. You know, do we need to do a refresh on the website? You know, those are the types of questions to be asking. And then each 90 days, pick one thing, because guess what? No matter what you're doing, by my case study that I gave you, the $1 million spender and his cases went up, guess what? They've redone their targeting. Their budget has stayed pretty consistent over this whole time, but we certainly have made enormous changes to the targeting and some of the creative. So what's the right combination? A-B test quarterly.
Yeah, I love that concept of having a testing calendar. And that's part of our business model is, you know, each month we're going to test some variable in your business. You know, we're going to do landing pages, or we're going to do a whole bunch of new keywords in a campaign, or we're going to test some, you know, some new video concept. You know, having that experimental component to, you know, 5 or 10% of your budget, testing something new is really valuable. I mentioned this to you when we were chatting. I mean, a CEO group, we meet every month and we're audited by the MBA class at the university where we hold our meetings. And we always ask the speakers, you know, what was there a change or a pivot in your life where you made a you know, career altering decision, and what did you learn from that would be applicable to a young MBA or a young lawyer just starting out?
I think for me, you know, just I love reading, and I what I really like is reading about business people. So I've read lots and lots of biographies, and I've read Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs twice because I just love that book. It's been a few years. I might have to reread it. But one of the things about Steve Jobs, it really, it's it really is about the consumer. Is it so easy, especially when you're a law firm, that you're investing enormous sums of money in your marketing program, and it's very easy and understandable that you want to, you're looking inward and you want to make sure that you're representing your firm, but ultimately it's you're trying to help, you're trying to serve the community that you're practicing law. And so at every step along the way, and that's the approach that I always take, is think about who are your potential clients in a law firm. How are they spending their time? What do they care about? And then really reverse engineer from the consumer standpoint. And that's really been at the heart of Apple's success, is that they've always said, we want to provide an incredible user experience. And to the same degree, law firms, if they can help, if I can help them and guide them, and what is that? What is their consumer? What does their potential client look like? I think that has served me well.
The classic features versus benefits, right? Like the law firm always wants to say, we have 30 lawyers. And the consumer wants to say, you know, you're going to fight the insurance.
Are you going to help?
Like, what's the benefit for the consumer? Good one. So now the quick ones, I call them the short snappers.
Yep.
Tell me about any apps or techniques you use for personal productivity.
Yeah, and I mentioned this at the conference, and this helps me, is that I use a CRM for my daily task, and I try to have 20 or 25 tasks. But what I started doing a couple of years ago there's a term for it, of organizing your calendar, not in tasks, but in times. So just putting on my calendar, like if I have
like time blocks.
Time blocks, thank you. Time blocks. So that's been a really big help, because if it's my tasks might not get done in my CRM, but my time blocks, not 80, 90% of the time I get those done, because I know those are mission critical tasks. So time blocking on my calendar, and I use a Outlook calendar.
We have a book we give all our new employees, and we do a book club.
Okay.
A couple of years, we go through a chapter a week, a book called Eat That Frog by Brian Tracy. But you're hinting at the core principle there, which is the mission critical tasks have to get done. And yep. The concept in the book is, if you do your top three tasks in the morning, first thing in the morning, you've already had a great day, because so many of us tend to procrastinate about the most important tasks. And if you get them done first thing in the morning, you're like, okay, I've already won the day. You know, everything else from here is a bonus. You hinted on business books. Isaacson's Steve Jobs, a couple other best business books.
So there's one, an oldie but a goodie. It's kind of funny to read it now because it was so long ago, but Seth Godin wrote Permission Marketing, which is a really great, it's a seminal book. And it's funny because it was back in the day when Yahoo was the leading search engine. But the principle, though, is absolutely the same, is that if you can build enough, know, like, and trust, if you can build enough trust and credibility that somebody is willing to let you, for example, be a subscriber to your service and charge their credit card every month, but you have to build that trust. And so that's a really great book. And the other one I would really throw out that I think back to quite a bit is The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. And he's written about follow-ups to that. And, ultimately, just creating a consistent engine of a business. So you're providing a consistent level of service, and that the business itself is efficient, both for the business to run and the problem that it solves for the consumer.
Yeah. And I think I've personally learned an evolution of that it's like, E-Myth is about developing systems in your business. And he has an example of a pie shop, and this owner made phenomenal pies and people were lined up out the door. And then when she hired someone, she didn't have a facility to teach her, 10 years or 20 years of learning from her aunt who made these incredible pies. And another one was a hotel that ran like clockwork.
I remember them both. Yeah.
You see the manager, and the manager had all these binders behind his desk, and he showed him the checklist for everything from checking someone in to cleaning the room and presetting the coffee maker. So his coffee was made in his room for him. But the evolution of that I've found is that if you develop these systems and your employees know exactly what to do every time, and you can train and then retrain if they make mistakes, there's a lot more job satisfaction, a lot more happiness in the workplace, because the more chaos and disarray, the more frustration employees have these days. So that's a love eMyth and the evolution. Well, now we're using ClickUp, which is a software project management system. And if we have really great checklists in ClickUp and it's delivered in the software, then people really use it. Because one thing I found with those binders behind the desk, nobody opened the binders.
No. Yep.
How about blogs, podcasts, YouTubes, anything you subscribe to, when it hits your feed, you always open that right up?
You know, it's the Mismatch NBA. My podcast is really for but you know, but the TGR Live podcast, of course. But all kidding aside, so I have, since I've really just been immersed the last 3 years in the legal marketing space, I really like your podcast. Ken Hardison does a great podcast as well over at Pilma.
Yep.
And I scroll through, you know, a lot of the stuff that's maybe more operational, I may not listen to those podcasts, but the marketing related podcasts, it's just invaluable to hear people on the front line, and particularly the challenges that law firms are experiencing. So I would say those are a couple that do come to mind. I look for.
And you're going to Pilma, right?
Yes, sir.
For those of you listening in real time, I think this podcast will be early May, May 13th to 16th. David and I will be in New Orleans with Ken Hardison and all the great friends of Pilma, Personal Injury Lawyers Marketing and Management Association.
But that's right.
It's something like that. But hope to see you all in New Orleans. And if you're going to be there, give David and I a shout out on social media. We'll connect. Dave and I are having dinner with a group of lawyers, and we'd love to see you. And last one's real easy. Where can people get in touch with you?
Sure. So my name is David Klein, K-L-E-I-N, like Calvin, no relation. And my phone number is 704-564-8745. Email address is dklein, K-L-E-I-N, at consult, with a T, then .tv.
Consult.tv. So
yes, sir.
Just exactly the way it sounds. Awesome. Well, David, thanks for doing this. Really enjoyed, you know, sort of getting that mystery solved of OTT, digital TV, and spending some time with you. And we'll look forward to seeing you in New Orleans in a couple weeks.
Likewise.
Thank you for listening to the 10 Golden Rules of Internet Marketing for Law Firms podcast. Please send questions and comments to podcast@tengoldenrules.com. That is podcast@tengoldenrules.com.